Welcome to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. Dan Gottlieb is a psychologist living and working near Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and also the host of Voices in the Family, broadcast on WHYY, and the author of a recent book called Learning from the Heart, Lessons on Living, Loving, and Listening. He has an interesting point of view about life as a result of a spinal cord injury that he suffered at the age of 33 that left him with quadriplegia. He found himself facing the kinds of questions that most people encounter over the course of a whole lifetime. Should I continue living, and how do I do it? In this edition of Radio Curious, we visit with my longtime friend, Dan Gottlieb. Dan Gottlieb, welcome to Radio Curious.
Thanks, Barry. It's nice to be back.
In your book, Learning from the Heart, Lessons on Living, Loving, and Listening, you talk a lot about being happy, happier when we are where we belong, and not trying to get somewhere that isn't us. Can you describe that?
Sure. And even though we're talking about this book, I'll begin answering that with my other book, Letters to Sam. And in that book, which was a series of letters written to my grandson, who's on the autism continuum, I wanted to tell him a bit about what it means to be human. And I begin with an old Jewish parable. This is one where before an infant's born, before a child's born, God, according to the parable, infuses this child with all of the wisdom and knowledge they need to get by in life. And then he puts his fingers over the child's lips and says, shh, at that moment in infusing a secret pact between the child and God. As the saying goes, that's why that dent is under our nose. That's God's fingerprint. It's a sweet story, but I have found that to be true in a spiritual sense, in a literal sense, even in a biological sense, that everything we need really is in there. It's already in there. So the question is about getting access to it. And so too with happiness. Happiness is in there. It's in our very being. It's not out there. And too many of us have gotten pleasure and happiness confused. So we work very hard and devote our lives in the pursuit of what we think is happiness, but it's really pleasure.
Can you explain what that difference is?
Sure. It's the new house, or the pay raise, or the car, or the vacation, or whatever it is. And the problem is, those things bring us, in fact, pleasure. But it doesn't last, and it doesn't bring us happiness. Conversely, we devote a lot of our energy pursuing what we think, or avoiding what we think will cause us distress. So we avoid the risk of our children failing. So we push them to get into the right college. We push ourselves to be higher in achieving, or better looking, or more whatever, more. And we push ourselves to be the person we think we should be because we think somehow that'll make us happy or make our children happy. And in fact, it won't.
Well, can you describe, and it's probably a pretty individual experience for each of us, the feeling of pleasure as opposed to the feeling of happiness?
Sure. It's individual. And the best I could do is give examples. Okay? Pleasure, depending on your tastes, the Three Musketeers for me. So, a great meal, pleasurable and makes you happy in the short run. Things like that are pleasurable. I went on a terrific vacation. That was pleasurable. Happiness, when you see your child for the first time and your heart opens. Happiness is when you feel you've made a contribution to the quality of someone else's life. Happiness is a feeling of well-being that lives inside of you. To me, happiness is related to gratitude for having a life, for having love in my life, the ability to love and be loved. All of those things are related to happiness. To me, and they're rock solid. They don't go away.
In your book, Learning from the Heart, Lessons on Living, Loving, and Listening, where does anxiety fit in to the difference between pleasure and happiness?
The answer to where anxiety fits in is it fits in wherever it wants. It's like water, you know. It fits in everywhere. I don't think it's related to pleasure one way or the other. You know, we pursue pleasure, we pursue happiness, often as a way to manage unfelt anxiety. We work hard, too hard, as a way to manage unfelt anxiety about fill in the blanks, you know, about failing, about not working, about not having happiness or pleasure. But the underpinnings of it is unfelt anxiety that we feel we can't manage. And if we can face our anxiety, if we can learn to not be afraid of our anxiety, we don't have to master it. I think living in this world, being human, having a mind, we're always going to have anxiety. But if we can learn to live with anxiety and not be afraid of it, not try to master it, I think we'll be more comfortable inside of our own lives.
Will you talk about our country having a national anxiety? What do you mean by that?
Well, it's kind of what I referred to earlier. I wrote an article about that for the Philadelphia Inquirer in 1999, that I felt we had an anxiety disorder. And that was, you know, Barry, it was before 9/11, and it's just gotten so much worse now that we are anxious about almost everything. You know, I've got a friend of mine said to me, he said, my daughter loves dancing and she loves gymnastics. He said, but it's really time for her to pick one of those two so that she can concentrate and we can move it up a notch. Well, his daughter was 5 years old. So, and regardless of what age, why does she have to choose? And why does she have to move it up a notch? And that's about anxiety. It's not about love. It's not about well-being. It's about anxiety. And that's what we do with ourselves. It's about anxiety. We push and we drive. And, you know, family meals are a thing of the past anymore. And children who have family meals with families 3 to 4 times a week are 60% less likely to use drugs and affiliate with children who use drugs. So, but we've got too much anxiety about achieving and doing to sit down and rest and do nothing. Let our minds heal. Let our bodies heal. So I think so much of what we do is driven by anxiety. Everybody complains of stress, and stress is just a different word for anxiety.
I'm interested in when you say people who do too much don't sit back so that their minds can heal. Healing in that context, to me, implies that there's a disruption or a problem with doing too much. Is that what you imply?
Well, I don't need to imply it. I can say it. You do too much. It hurts you. You know it hurts your body when you do too much.
So is that the dividing line? Too much is when it begins to hurt?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. When it hurts your body, when it hurts your mind, when it hurts your spirit.
Well, in a society like ours, where people work from 8 to 5, as compared to some societies in Europe where they work shorter hours and have more frequent and longer vacations, how does a person begin to know when it is hurting too much, as opposed to feeling like they're standing out from the group, maybe being too hedonistic?
Well, that question, which is a fair question, I think is part of the answer, or describes part of the problem. We don't know when we're hurting too much because we go so fast. We have become desensitized. I'll tell you a story I mentioned in the book about my grandson, Sam. As I mentioned, he's on the autism continuum, and kids who are on the spectrum tend to have meltdowns when they're overstimulated. So I was there this past summer, and he had a meltdown. He got overstimulated, and he did what he does. His body got rigid. His face got red. He got filled with rage at himself and others. And he finally just collapsed and began to sob on the floor. Well, his mother picked him up and held him. And when he reconstituted, he said, "Mommy, everything just went too fast today inside my head." Now, any of us could have said that. The difference is, Sam knows it. We don't. Sam feels the pain of that. And we don't. We're desensitized to it because we go too fast. We're trying to achieve too much. And the only way we can know about our body minds and care for our body minds is to stop and take some time and just experience our lives. We don't have to stop thinking or stop feeling. We just have to experience our lives, and so many of us don't do that.
Being friends, as you and I have for going on 15 years, I can understand that that's a statement that would come from a wise elder like you. But in terms of making that a value in our society, how do you propose to do that?
Read the Bible. Read any Bible. Any religion, any wise person, all talk about the Sabbath. Take a day off. We need to do it. And what I ask of people is not to change your life dramatically. Just take 5 minutes a few times a day and just feel your life. Feel your body. Do it at meals. I gave a lecture, Barry, a couple of weeks ago about balancing your life. These are counselors who do too much like the rest of us. And I talked to them about burnout. And I said to them, I opened my lecture and I said, "I missed breakfast this morning." I said, "I didn't miss the meal, I ate it, but I missed it." I said, "I was reading the newspaper and going over my lecture notes, thinking about what I was going to say while I was eating breakfast, and I missed breakfast. I didn't really taste the coolness of the yogurt. I didn't taste the consistency of the fruit. I didn't feel the different flavors on my tongue. I didn't notice the anticipation of my taste buds as the food moved to my mouth. I didn't feel the satisfaction as I swallowed and it went down. I missed my breakfast." And how many of us miss our whole lives? doing that, doing exactly that all day. All I ask of people is to not miss your breakfast. Just do it in meals. Just taste your meals. Feel the weight of it. Smell it. Smell the food. Notice which side of the mouth you chew it on and the temperature, the taste, and how it feels going down.
In this edition of Radio Curious, we're visiting with Dan Gottlieb, a psychologist based near Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and the author of Learning from the Heart, Lessons on Living, Loving, and Listening. You're listening to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. Approximately 30 years ago, Dan Gottlieb suffered a terrible automobile accident that left him as a quadriplegic and a certain sense of hopelessness. Yet, Dan, you describe this hopelessness as a gift.
Yeah, hope can really screw up your life. A friend of mine told me, who is near the end of her life, she's 38 years old, near the end of her life, she's got 6 children, and she says, hope is about expectations and a demand of the universe, she said. Hope takes you out of your life. It takes you out of the moment. I tell a story about how after my accident, I told my loved ones that I would live with this for 2 years, and then if I couldn't take it anymore, I'd take my life. And at the end of 2 years, I had a conversation with, I don't know, Barry, fill in the blank, you know, God, my higher power, I don't know. And I said, okay, I said, I'll live with this, but give me hope that one day I'll walk. And the voice back said, no hope, live or die, choose one. And I said, then give me hope that I won't be so sick, because my health was so volatile those first couple of years. Same thing. No hope. Live or die. Choose one. And everything I asked for, it's what I heard. Live or die. The message is this is your life. Your life's not around the corner. It's not what's going to happen if certain things fall into place. Your life is not what it was yesterday. This is your life. Choose life or don't, but make a choice. And hope is about the future. So I've always touted the gifts of hopelessness. I heard one definition of hope, though, that I can live with. And that was from Jerome Groatman, the physician, pathologist. He writes a lot for the New York Times. One of his books is called The Anatomy of Hope. And in that, he defined hope as the belief that tomorrow can be better than today. Now, that's not about healing, or in my friend's case, who's dying of cancer, that's not about the belief that she won't be dying of cancer tomorrow, or that I'll be walking, or that I'll have perfect love in my life, or whatever I think I'm missing. But the belief that the joy I feel today, this moment, I can also feel tomorrow.
In Learning from the Heart, you have a chapter entitled, What I've Learned About Wanting. That sounds to me like it's linked to hope.
Yes. Yeah, very much so. And that's really what wanting is about. You know, that it is our desires that often get us into trouble. Now, we're humans. We're animals. We can't not have desires. But it is the unfelt desires. It is the belief that what we desire is essential that gets us in trouble, because what we desire is not essential 99% of the time, and it is the desire itself that often drives the machine and shouldn't necessarily be doing that. I'll give you a good example. I've got a dear friend of mine who grew up in a very difficult childhood. Her father left when she was early. Her mother was a pretty volatile, unstable woman who threw her out when she was 15 years old, sent her to live in New York with an aunt who she didn't even know. She always had a dream in her head of the kind of family she wanted, that picture inside of her head. And as she grew, she married a man, and she thought, I'm going to have that family now. And it looked like she was going to have that family. She had two kids, but the man didn't quite fit that picture, and the marriage didn't quite work out, and she was disappointed again with her life. Went out with a few other men, same thing, they didn't fit the picture. And then her daughter got married, and she thought, well, at least I'll have it now through my daughter, I'll have that picture. And it didn't work out for her daughter either. So she felt she didn't have a very good life, my friend. Her life has been filled with disappointment. But the question I have is, what caused her suffering her whole life? Was it all these situations, or was it that damn picture she carried around inside her head? I think what caused her pain was her desire, and it was the desire that took her out of her life.
The hope that never manifested.
Right. Right. That I will be happy when, or I will be happy if, or I will start to live my life right around the corner.
I remember years ago you shared a story with me about a person who came to see you who said, I will be happy when I get married. And your response was, you'll be who you are now. The only difference is you'll be married.
Right. A lot of people say being married makes you happy. And, you know, as a marital therapist, I can say being married makes you married. It doesn't make you happy necessarily. There's a fabulous book written, Stumbling on Happiness, by Dan Gilbert, Harvard professor. Just a wonderful book. And he said most of our decisions are about trying to make our future selves happy. When you think about it, that's really what we do, even our decisions about what restaurant to go to, what meal to order, what to do for dinner, and long-range plans. They're about making our future selves happy. He says, according to the research, and he's culled the literature of thousands of pieces of research, he said, we really have no idea what will make our future selves happy. And what we think will make our future selves happy doesn't necessarily make that person happy. And likewise, I add to it, is that we devote so much of our energy trying to avoid what we think will make our future selves unhappy. But we don't know what's going to make our future selves unhappy. This woman with cancer, who's dying, she's happier than she's ever been in her life. Go figure. And if someone had said to me when I was 32 years old that I was going to become a quadriplegic, that my sister, my wife, my parents would all die within the next 15 years, and if they had said, but don't worry, you'll be happy anyway, come on. But I'm happy.
What brought you to the state of happiness where you are?
I think gratitude. I think I have just faced my death so often that I live with it now. I do what Sartre said, to live with death on my shoulder. I think being so close to my death shines a light on my life. And I really am grateful that I do have this thing called life. I know how precious it is. I know how fragile it is. I know how few people have it. I know how blessed I am to be alive, to have food when I'm hungry, to be able to pick up the phone and talk to someone I love who loves me. That's an amazing thing, Barry, for somebody to be able to say, and how blessed I am that not only can I say it, but I know it, that I feel it. I'm grateful. And to me, that's more important than happiness. I'm grateful. I truly feel blessed, and I'm conscious of feeling blessed.
Well, Dan Gottlieb, author of Learning from the Heart, Lessons on Living, Loving, and Listening, I want to thank you for being with us on Radio Curious. And before we close, is there an interesting book over and above the two that you've already mentioned that you could tell us about?
Well, there's a book I just read, and I can't fully remember the title, but it's one of the best books I've ever read on depression. It's Mindfulness-Based Cognitive Therapy and Depression. One of the authors is Jon Kabat-Zinn, and I think it's just a beautiful, beautiful description of the experience of depression and some of the tools to deal with it.
Well, Dan Gottlieb, thank you very much for being with us on Radio Curious.
Thank you, Barry.
Daniel Gottlieb is the author of Learning from the Heart, Lessons on Living, Loving, and Listening. The book that he recommends is The Mindful Way Through Depression, Freeing Yourself from Chronic Unhappiness by Jon Kabat-Zinn. That's JonKabat-Zinn. This interview with Dan Gottlieb was recorded on May 14th, 2008. If you're interested in Dr. Gottlieb's reference to Jerome Groopman and his book, The Anatomy of Hope, you may find it in the archives of Radio Curious. It was recorded in February of 2004. Copies of this and other editions of Radio Curious can be found on our website, www.radiocurious.org. There are over 750 archives on our website, radiocurious.org, and I'm honored to tell you that Radio Curious is now part of the collection at the Library of Congress. We appreciate your cards, ideas, and letters, and do enjoy hearing from you. The email is curious@radiocurious.org. The postal address is 700 West Smith Street, Ukiah, California, 95482. The phone is 707-621-5075. Ignacio Ayala is the assistant producer. I'm host and producer, Barry Vogel. Thank you for listening.